This is CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with CRB Ealing. Live on Cliff Central.
Welcome to the Threaded Exchange. It's Siyabonga Biyile live from Johannesburg. And today's show is going to be very, very interesting. Happy Black History Month. And today we're going to open up the show in an African manner. You know, we're going to celebrate being African, we're celebrate being black. And my guest today is also, he's from Congo. And he has a lot of interesting things to say. And you know the man. On Twitter, you know him as Fred Mercury, but I know him as Fred Kayembe. And the first song I'm going to open up with is Fela Kuti, Zombie.
Zombie, oh zombie,
zombie, oh zombie.
Tell him to go straight, no break, no jam, no sense. Tell him to go kill, a joro jar, a joro. No break, no jam, no sense. A joro jar, a joro. Tell him to go quench, a joro jar, a joro. No break, no jam, no sense. A joro jar, a joro. Go and kill, go and die.
Yeah. We are live on the Threaded Exchange. This is Siyabonga Biyile live from Johannesburg, from South Africa to the world, on the number one podcast station in the world, and this is Cliff Central. I know factually I might be wrong, but I mean, I love Cliff Central. So I'm going to pump Cliff Central, of course. I've got my younger brother in studio with me, Anga.
Hello. Hello to the people of the world, like you said. Number one. Can we say that? Are we allowed
I'm
to
gonna
say that?
I'm going
to
say number one. You're not number one until you proclaim you're number one.
Actually, yeah. Fuck it.
So
we're number one.
We're number one. We've gone platinum. Guys, welcome to another installment. As I said before, I'm CIB Eland. You know that we about having progressive, cultured, and brave conversations around things that we're facing as young people, things that we don't understand. I feel in our time of pop culture, there's just a lot that is happening and there's a lot to dissect. Hey. And so this show aims at to tackle the issues, celebrate the things that we need to celebrate. But most importantly, it's about inspiring each other. It's about having conversations that are uncomfortable
and honest
but that are, you know, increment or important in our growth going forward. And as young people of Africa, we are the custodians of our future. We are the custodians of our cultures. Mm-hmm. And I've loved the whole conversation around Inxeba, for example. Being close, I was like, yo, this is a dialogue that we need to have.
Yeah,
this is a
long dialogue. Overdue.
Long overdue. So long as young people, we need to, you know, tackle those kind of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, we opened the show today with Zombie by Fela Kuti.
Zombie,
and
as
we all know, Fela was quite political. And looking at our political change right now, what's happening politically in South Africa, I mean, there's no better song than to use as to open, because this song, Zombie, is actually about how the police brutality that was happening in Nigeria at the time and how these Nigerians were just like zombies, just following orders and not thinking about how they're affecting people and how they're hurting people in their own country. So, and I mean, I'm not throwing jabs at Zuma, but I mean, Zuma, dude, you affecting the people in your country. Don't be a zombie. It's time to step away. Leave us some room for change. Anyways, Fred Mercury,
what's good? Fresh off the boat, man.
Yeah,
from Congo.
When I said you're from Congo, you like say you're talking like I just got fresh off the boat.
Yeah, it's just it's a weird thing to pinpoint. I guess that's how people distinct, like nationality. People identify with different things: your gender, your race, your. But it's like when people, it's like Fred from Congo. It's like it's weird because I've been here a really long time.
So yeah. But also for me, I think I've moved into a space where not actually moved into a space, but I just love people from diverse cultures across Africa, and I think it's not something we encourage enough. You know, when I speak to a lot of my friends, you think, yo, they're South African, but really, like, where are you from? They're like, I'm from Congo. Like the lady that helps me clean my house, for example, today she's like, I'm from Zimbabwe, and we had a whole conversation about that. I'm like, whoa, I know you now on a different level. It's not like that blank thing of, yo, you're South African. But, you know, and the South Africans, we need to start, and also as young Africans, we need to start being together in terms of understanding each other's cultures, because I feel like one of the biggest problems we have in society today is that we don't understand enough of each other's cultures. So how do we expect to face the West and the East if we don't know each other or ourselves? Yeah. Because we have the power, and part of that power is realizing self-value.
And we need to
see that value amongst each other. Fred.
Mm.
You know, like on the show, I hate that whole thing of introducing people by their bios.
Yeah.
You know how you list, like, oh, did this. I could talk about Hype magazine. I can talk about how you are a culturist and how you've changed the culture. I can talk about how some of the famous rappers in the country were first discovered by you. I can say all those things, but I always feel like that's the ego. Yeah. You know, that's the ego. For me,
it's not the source.
It's not the source.
I have a really hard time introducing myself as well, like more recently than ever before, because I kind of understand the need to like categorize sometimes. Like I get it. It's kind of like it's a blurry line. I was talking about it with somebody the other day, but it's like at the same time, it's like I personally always feel really uncomfortable. It's like, who are you? You know, they're not really asking like, who are you? They're saying like, we need you to list stuff to determine your value so we can determine if you deserve to be here. Like, I feel like that's what that question is asking. Yeah. But it's like, it's whatever, you know, we live in the real world with real structures. So
also, I
you
think
gotta
like,
do it sometimes.
Also, I feel like when you, cause I also hear a lot in fashion, like some people give themselves titles. I'm a fashion phenom. I'm a fashion director.
Curator.
I'm a curator. I'm a visual storyteller. I'm a storyteller.
It can get really abstract.
And I feel that sometimes, as much as titles are great, it also prevents you from exploring more of who you are in yourself, because you hide behind other these titles. And also that can actually prevent you from exploring other projects, because now let's say I'm looking for the best photographer, but you write the visual storyteller, and then I only see that you tell stories through Instagram, not knowing there's actually a whole production team does this thing. So sometimes it can actually prevent you from your careers.
You know what, I had an interesting conversation with my brother the other day, right? And we were having the same conversation, but I said, look, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, right? And say, for example, for the purposes of like award shows, they say a music award shows, the Grammys, and if we didn't give titles to those, people would get really mad if Selena Gomez won Best Hip Hop, right? So so for the purposes of like certain structures, that's why I said, like, for the purposes of certain structures, I understand like why titles and categories need to exist. Mm-hmm. But like, I just find that like the more, like the further we go into humanity, like those things just tend to break away, because people are just expressing themselves from a more sincere place.
Also because now, like, looking at hip hop as well, hip hop is now bigger than pop music.
Yeah.
And
hip hop is pop music.
Pop music. So that's another thing, is that even how hip hop sounds now, the sound has just traveled so much to other spheres, that if you listen to Lil Uzi Vert versus you listening to Nas or Q-Tip or Andre 3000, like the sound is so vast, and the sound is so spread out. So if at the Grammys you're saying this is the best pop album and you don't put Migos, what is that saying?
Because pop music is popular music.
Yeah.
It's not actually a genre. It's popular music.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Fred, for people who don't know you, who are you?
Okay, well, I am, you know, not, like I said, this is difficult for me to do, so it's easier to just list stuff.
List right? it. Do the thing.
It helps people digest.
Okay, so for me, I'll say list what you've done, and also, who are you as a person?
Yeah, okay.
What are your beliefs?
So I'd say most people would know me like primarily from the hip-hop circuit. I started off as a freelance writer like when I was 19 years old, and then I kind of just like worked my way up, and you know, I started working very closely with Hype when I was like 20 or 21, did guest editorship, it blew up, and then I was kind of on that train. Some people would know me from Vuzu. I used to be a presenter back in the day. That feels like ages ago. I think personally, if I have to speak from my perspective, I'm just like somebody who's really passionate about culture. Somebody who's passionate about culture, and you know, I want to see people win. I want to see people succeed. I want to see people just like express themselves in the most sincere and honest way possible. And I see myself as a servant.
Yeah.
You know, if I can help that for myself and for other people, you know, that's what I'm doing here. I feel like that's what my purpose is.
Where does that selflessness come from? I mean, we live in a generation where, you know, everybody, even people that are behind the scenes, want to be on the forefront and be on the camera.
Yeah.
You know, we live in such a time that is personality driven.
Yeah,
you know, everybody forgets about, not necessarily forgets about the work, but everyone's always like, how can I be on the front?
Yeah.
So now you find that your manager is also now a superstar on the red carpet. Mm-hmm. You know, we live in that kind of time where it's just overconsumption. Everyone wants to be on the camera. Yeah. Everyone wants to have followers on Twitter. where does it come from? Because I have known you for quite a while. You've never been that guy really on social media. You've always just been a critical part of the industry, but never really praised, never really gets the awards. But you're behind quite a lot of careers. But at the same time, you still remain selfless and behind the scenes. Where do you think that essence from you comes back? Like as a kid, when you, I mean, you joined Hype at 19. So at 15, 16, 17, when you're thinking about what you want to do for the rest of your life, how do you get to that source?
You know, I always think about this line, like in 2007, 2008, like Drake wasn't really even popping off yet, but he did a track and he has a line where he says, "I can't live and hold the camera. Someone's got to tape this." And that line was always like hit me. It was like always really profound, right? But and the way that I interpreted it was like, so the more I learned when I was growing up, right? I was like a kid, like everybody else. But like probably I would say I turned 16 and I started like getting more like quote unquote conscious. Yeah. I was a history student, so like the more I learned, the more information I was given. I started to come to the conclusion that like it's like we're not who people tell us we are. That's just like the history that exists, right? Because again, the more we advance into civilization, we realize that like the winner gets to tell the story. The version of history that we have is not necessarily like the most accurate.
It's the truth.
It's not the truth. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I then I realized like, yo man, like one day I read Steve Biko's like I Write What I Like, and he was like so radical and so opinionated, so educated. So and I was like, man, I've never resonated with like anybody like I did with Biko when I read that book. And I was, and he was saying like, "Hey guys, listen, I know these guys have torn down our morale and told us that we're animals and that we're less than and that we're this, but it's like that's not what it is. I'm here to tell you that like, you know what I mean? This is Africa, and like Africa is for Africans, and we're mighty, you know what I mean? We're powerful, you know what I mean?" And he put me in that zone, and I was just like, from then on, I kind of took the position of, I feel like it needs to be somebody's responsibility to reinvigorate that esteem into people, right? So, and how do we do that? Is by telling stories. And I look at myself as the storyteller, right? So I don't necessarily look at it as selflessness. I mean, that's maybe that's what it looks like, but I look at it as like, yo, if you are doing the most amazing things in the world, you're here in Cliff Central, you're doing amazing things in fashion and with other ventures, right? You're too busy focused on what you're doing to focus on having to tell that story as well. You know what I mean? And somebody has to take that responsibility, because 20 years from now, because we're living in these times and I know you personally, or like, you know, the next five people know you or whatever. If this stuff is not documented, we're going to be in the same place in 20 years or 50 years or 100 years than we are right now, because we didn't document this. We don't have proof. We don't have scripts. Yeah. We don't have sources to go back to and say, you know what? I actually come from a bloodline and a generation of kings and queens, and not what these guys try to tell you.
So basically, we're the guidebooks for the next generation to come, for them to retrace our steps properly, not retrace our steps necessarily through seeing on Instagram,
but about, stand on your shoulders.
Yeah, it's like, how did this guy get from here to here?
Yeah, we need to be the ones to control our own narrative as well. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Is because again, like I said, like the quote unquote winner gets to tell the stories. Right now, like as black people, as Africans, because of however many hundred years of history, we're not economically in a position where we own Africa, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, if they're the people who have the resources, meaning they're the people who have the power, they're the people who are going to control the narrative.
Yeah.
So if we're not standing up and saying, I'm going to make sure that all these amazing people and these amazing acts and these great humanitarians and philanthropists and inspirers, stories are being told, you know what I mean? Yeah. What are we doing this all for?
Also, I think another thing about us Africans that is actually quite troubling for me most of the time, you know, not to be sound controversial, but we've gotten used to the idea of what the world wants us to be.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the space where we like Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. you know, Black Girls Shine, whatever, mm-hmm. somehow the East and the West has found a way to recreate that story back to us.
Man.
You know, so I even think about the whole H&M thing, that whole racist thing. I mean, H&M knew what they were doing. They knew that we're going to be outraged. They're going to trend. It's not going to shut the stores down.
Yeah.
You know, the stores will be shut down momentarily. I even think a lot of the times where I challenge, you know, the creative industry, especially with bloggers and guys in fashion, where the huge rush right now, if you see, even across the industry, the huge rush right now is about which brand am I going to endorse next? You know, which brand am I going to work with? We all floss about, oh, look at me, I'm with Hugo Boss. Oh, look at me with this. But my biggest issue is always about, are you telling your story with that brand? Mm-hmm. Or is it just about the check? If you get the check, what value have you gotten?
For sure.
So how do you feel about that? Like, because we live in a time, I mean, I'm not going to sound blunt, but I mean, you know, Ricky will tell us to go buy Gucci.
Yeah.
You know, not I'm saying he's wrong for telling us buy Gucci, but I'm just like, but what African story are you telling through your music?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, I have to say, like, that's one of the sources of my daily frustration, man. Like, it's like, man, that complex is so crazy that we have like such a crazy inferiority complex that we have to be validated by like people on the outside to be like, it's again, like even in fashion, it's like someone wears like a fashion
Balenciaga, everyone's going crazy.
You know what I mean? And then us as Africans, and we're like, oh my gosh, that Africa, it's like, yo, you are in Africa. You are Africa. Yeah. You are the source of what those people are channeling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's a crazy task, man. It's something that we all have to do and all be involved in, man. Like, and that's why raising consciousness and like validating ourselves is like more important than looking for that validation outward. And really, like, that's how I look at like what I do. I look at it as storytelling, because you know, my parents came to visit recently, and you know, my parents are like old school, you know, traditional Congolese people.
Yeah, I was seeing the stories with the food, eh?
Yeah, for sure.
All of you have gained weight, you and your brothers, because the food was crazy.
But I was trying to explain to my mom what I do. You know how that is? It's like, you know, traditionally it's like, yo, you're a doctor, accountant, well, and I don't fall into any of those molds, right? So it's difficult enough that I can't really explain to people what I do in a language that I'm fluent in. And I had to try to explain to my mom, like in French. You know, try to explain to my mom what I do. So I was just like showing her stuff. I was showing her like, oh, look, I was the editor of Hype Magazine. I was like showing her YouTube videos, like, okay, I serve on the music council and I did this and I help, you know. But what I was really trying to get at is like, it's really easy to dismiss, say, the hip hop faction, for instance, as, yo, those are just guys who are like drinking liquor and fucking bitches and making music for us to party to, right? Mm. But it's like the conversation, it's similar to the conversation that we've been having around like Black Panther. It's like, of course, it's not a perfect situation. And yes, Hollywood is still making the money and the part, but it's like representation is so important.
Yeah.
Representation is so important, because I know it's a cliche thing to say at this point, but the fact that Barack Obama was a president and a black man alone, like irrespective of what he accomplished or did not accomplish in his term, right? Someone, a kid who's growing up and that's the first president that they've ever seen, right? To them, it's not a novelty. It's normal. So they're automatically growing up.
And 10 years is a
up,
long time. Obama said for 10 years.
How many kids were born?
Yeah.
And it's like that immediately takes the novelty out of it. And you like, immediately you feel like, oh, that's just a normal thing.
Yeah.
You know, same thing as if we had if here we had like a female president or whatever. So representation is so important. So it's like all the years that we grew up listening to music and subscribing to like versions of culture that didn't necessarily resonate with us, but because we only had access to that, is like, trust me, like when people when Casper is like performing and 50,000 people at the stadium or whatever, it's like that's not where it ends. It's like those people are really changing lives, really changing lives. You know, when I met Nasty C, right, like 2 or 3 years ago, he was in Durban and like I think finishing off high school or whatever, and I connected.
And
with
he gave you a shout out on his track,
And I connected with him and stuff, and you know, I started to sort of like speak to people about him, and then he's in a position where he's like 20 years old or whatever, 21 years old. And he has a family of like with like 5 or 6 siblings, and his dad and his mom passed away, and he has a crib, like he's paying off the crib, he's paying off like his sister's varsity fees, and this, it's like This is changing lives. You know what I mean? And yeah. It's like when you, and it's important for not only those things to be done, but go further a step and for those stories to be told. Because if not, we always look at what's on the surface and we go, oh, this guy's just a rapper. This guy's just an actor. This guy's just a fashion guy. And that's how we build esteem as a people, man. Like,
yeah, it's always been sort of, yeah, my heartbreak, I think, in the industry, or the reason why I've done the things that I do. And sometimes I feel like I'm misunderstood, is the fact that it's like, it's conversation that happen overseas all the time, especially in the fashion creative industry. The fashion industry right now, I feel, is a bit blind because we see what the bloggers overseas are doing. We see what the creatives overseas are doing. But instead of looking at it and be like, okay, cool, this is how you execute, but let's execute on the same level or even a better level through telling our own stories. Mm-hmm. But now what you're seeing on Instagram is just bloggers recreating what the others are doing overseas. I remember talking to the team at Tom Ford, and they're like, listen, we're not looking for the same blog. We have bloggers overseas. We've got people who can do dope aesthetics. We want to know, what is Africa's story? How can you represent our brand through your story? And so in the industry right now, especially going back to Black Panther, I think Black Panther is amazing because it's going to create this gold mine that's going to start, it's going to create that tipping point that we need, that's going to push people now to look at Africa. Brands are going to look at Africa. Yeah. Brands are going to find value in Africa. Yeah. And what I'm worried about is, what do we have to offer that's originally ours? Because it sounds like, you know, the world's looking at us, but then we are saying to the world, hey, go buy Gucci. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So do we start addressing that? Even the fact that there's so many talented people who have Instagram, but then I'm always like, why aren't you showcasing at a gallery? Why aren't you releasing a book? Why aren't you building, you know, a foundation and mentor other young photographers? You know, I feel like we get so comfortable in platforms that don't belong to us. Even like brands like Nike, Adidas, Puma. You know, all the time, like, I've worked with Nike before, I've worked with Adidas, now I'm doing some stuff with Puma, and I'm always like, for me, my thing is, I'm like, yo, I'm going to work with you guys, but I want to build my own Puma, I want to build my own Adidas, why aren't we thinking that way? Like, why don't, I mean, Ricky Rick could build his own Gucci, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, why do you think we are not finding that intrinsic value in ourselves, or the bravery, or being brave enough to build the brands we admire? So, if you admire Hugo Boss, cool. Do we have Hugo Boss? No. Why aren't you building your own brand? I mean, Dolce & Gabbana sells us Italian culture. Balenciaga sells us Parisian. All these brands are selling us their own cultures, and we adopt them as our own culture. And we forget that we have a culture that we can also sell to the world and document our stories and tell our stories.
Yeah. I think it's a tough one because, like, yeah, it's a double-edged sword because, one, it's difficult to think about telling stories or representation when you're hungry, right? So it's like it's an instant. It's like you're looking for instantaneous relief. So it's like if the easiest way to get the check so you can get out of the gutter is to sell your value to Nike or Dolce or whoever, it's like you're gonna take the check. Honestly, there's no rationale process in hunger and poverty. You know what I mean? So like, we've been historically, like, we've been put in a position where it's like we're subservient and we're reliant on other people to feed us. Like, that's literally like the Bantu education system. Yeah. Like, you were taught to be a blue collar laborer. Like, those were the skills that
you don't have a choice.
So it's like, yo, I don't have like the level of I don't own anything. So if I'm gonna get an instantaneous checkout, and I think it takes a really selfless person or someone who understands the bigger picture to go, you know what? I can make this 5,000 Rand now, or I can make 5 million in later. 6 years.
Yeah, because also I think we are also, as a country and as Black people, I think, because true, most of us don't have money. Most of us are in debt. Most of us feel like we're not being paid enough. So if we're earning 10 grand, we know our lifestyle is 20 grand. So where brands have got us really is the pocket.
Exactly.
Because a brand's going to be like, okay, cool, you want to build this thing on your own, we can offer you 5 million right now.
Exactly.
And I mean, anybody's going to not take that. And, do you
know
what I'm saying?
And that's why the responsibility is on us, like, to band together. So the few of us that have managed to get to a position where we have some ownership, where we have knowledge to share, where we have skills to share, like, we need to band amongst ourselves and be like, hey, you know, things are not going to change if we don't become that change. You know what I mean? And then from there we can work on it.
So crazy because there's a few of us, you know, that take those steps to be like, you know what, the money can wait. Ooh, there's the phones are ringing. So, you know, we're in a position where, for example, for me, it was never really about money. It's only recently now where I'm like, okay, I'm running a business. Okay, I have to care. And even now, those things give me anxiety because I'm like, I just want to create dope, cool stuff. I want to make dope shit. I don't want to be worried about, you can't do this now because you have to spend this much. You know, it stifles you. But then you get people like, you know, your Black Coffees. You get, you know, DJ Smooth with More Fire, who's like, I'm going to build an energy drink. Yeah. And then we're the same people who are like, yo, we need you to fail. We don't care about your shit. Yeah, it tastes like crap. We don't want to buy it. I remember the other day I bought More Fire. Well, my manager bought me More Fire and I was drinking. I was like, this is great. And I was telling friends, I'm like, guys, have you tried More Fire? They're like, nah, we'll never try that shit, whatever. And I'm just like,
I'll drink Red Bull.
I'll drink Red Bull. I'm like, but why though? Yes. You know what I'm saying? And just to finish off you all, is that it's also a thing of all these brands that have been around for hundreds of years, that they had years to fail. That had years to fail and try new
100%.
Things. But when some of us, or we're trying to build this 100%. New system and fail, that failure is not celebrated as part of the growth structure going forward.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it's, oh man, it's like, it's, again, it's a historical thing. I hate like going back to it because at some point we need to snap out of it and just be like, you know, we're living in the now and we need to be the ones to change it. But it is that. It's that we don't see that. It's like, you know, one of the things that really irked me is like, when people say, ah, black people, you know what I mean? Like something happens, it's like, yeah, only a black person would do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, dude, you think that, like, and one of the biggest ones is like, they'd be like, oh yeah, white men don't spend money on lavish things and cars and jewelry and what. It's like, you think that that's the way that it started out? That's definitely not the way that it started out. The largest reserves of gold and diamonds and all the minerals are in Africa. I guarantee you, like that, in that first 100 years that those guys were living like kings, they made a lot of mistakes. They splurged.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Dude, the mistakes have fucked up the world.
Yeah.
Like, democracy is fucked.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But they had 300 years to fix it.
Yeah.
Exactly. They had all that time to fix it to get. So they looked at their learnings and they were like, oh, okay, that doesn't work. That's not sustainable. This is not wise. You know what I mean? So this is how we're going to do things going forward. So it's like we need to give, you know, our entrepreneurs and our inspirers and our business guys that same space and that same courtesy. Because remember that when you're a pioneer, there's no precedent.
Yeah.
There's no one like Jay-Z doing Tidal, for example, is like, he doesn't really have a model that he can refer to be like, he can take the learnings that he has thus far in his life, but there's no precedent that you can bounce back to. So of course you're going to fail. It's part of the process. So we need to give all our guys, like the guys who are in our corner, that space to be like, you know what? You messed up there.
Yeah.
But you know, it's cool. Like, we still got you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
and I mean, you and I have spoken frankly about like failure, especially recently. You've been a great support to my failures recently. And you tell me like, yo, dude, I've been through the same shit.
Yeah.
I've been through the same things.
Yeah.
Tell me about when you experienced that failure. How do you think when you experienced that failure, ne? Do you feel the guilt for that failure comes from, you know, what people are going to say about you? Or does the guilt come from, fuck, I should have known better? Or do you think it's a bit of both?
I mean, personally, I never think about what people are going to say about me. And, you know, I know that sounds idealistic, but I kind of live in my own head like 99% of the time. So, and that kind of shields me from like whatever is going on outside. I was saying to Scoop the other day, he was like, man, life is so crazy. You know, the world is so crazy. And I was saying, I kind of feel like you have to build your own reality in your head. That way, like, even if it's raining outside, if it's sunny,
if
it's sunny inside, like, you're good.
Yeah.
You feel me? So I wouldn't say it comes from what other people, I wouldn't even say it's guilt, because the way I look at it is like, I always feel, no one likes to fail. No one wants to fail. Like, I always feel, you know, go through the whole thing of like, I should have done this better. I should have done this better. I should have seen the signs. I should have. But it's like, I've gotten to a point where it's like, if I can be certain in that I put my best foot forward and I did everything that I could do in that situation, and this is the outcome, then that was meant to be the outcome.
Yeah.
Then you have to deal with the reality. It's like, I always look at it like, man, there are people who are supposed to be here and there are people who aren't supposed to be here.
Yeah.
It's like natural selection in nature. You know what I mean? Natural selection, like the strongest rise to the top. And not to say that within humanity, there are like strong people and weak people, but we all have niches. We all have a purpose, right? And so when I worked at Akajo, and I got cussed out every day by my manager and I was terrible at what I did, it made me realize I'm not supposed to be here.
Yeah.
And then that took me closer to where I was supposed to be. And when that didn't work out, I learned something there. And then I'd go to the next, to the next adventure. So I'm not really at a point where I would say it's guilt. I do feel guilt when I put other people in that position, though.
Yeah,
definitely. Because when you're working and people are looking to you to lead, you need, it's not just about you.
I think that's the most hateful part about business, yeah. Especially with my recent things. I'm like, yo, if I don't earn money, that's fine. But when it affects other people, that's where the real fuck up happens.
That's,
but then, because then what it also does is it throws you off mentally completely.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Even with you, like, I like to teach lessons in this show. There's a lot of young people who are listening here who are like, yo, you know, I believe in what Freddie's saying. And you talk about this thing of having this inner voice. And you seem like, I'm reading this book by Eckhart Tolle called Awakening Your Life's Purpose. And it talks about no matter what happens in your life, do what you feel.
Yeah.
And sometimes what you feel might seem completely wrong. It might cause the biggest fuck up. But then that's what success is, because you're being true to yourself.
Yeah.
And your truth will last the test of time.
Yeah.
And that's how you'll keep improving and keep growing. So for you, how did you find that inner life awakening? It's so crazy because when I talk to you, I hear a lot of the fact that it might be raining outside, but inside I'm full. Inside it's warm.
Yeah.
The situation I'm going through right now is not forever. It's going to pass.
Yeah.
How do you begin to even do that? Do you meditate? Like, how do you get into that space?
I think, for me personally, I can say dealing with like disappointment and tragedy at an early age and then making the decision that I never wanted to feel like that again, or I want to feel like that as little as possible as I can control. So it's like when things go bad because they go bad, it's like, cool. But the part of my life that I can control, I'm going to do my best to have a grasp over that, and not on some control like crazy control tip, just like internally, because I think I was generally like a happy kid, but like some things, you know, I had like a brother who passed away, and that was like terrible when I was like 13 years old. You know, that was like terrible.
Wow.
Yeah, that was terrible. I had like, you know, like my folks who went like completely bankrupt when I was like 15, and like I remember like living in the city without like electricity for like 2 years. You know what I mean? I had like coming out of high school, no opportunities. You know what I mean? I couldn't go to varsity because I didn't have the funds to go to varsity, you know. But I knew, like, I always felt like I had something to offer. I just didn't know like what it was.
Yeah.
You know, but going through those trials and going through those tribulations, like, having to like get a job. When I was 19, I got a job at Akajo, right? But only because I wanted to make money, right? But I, even when I had the job, I felt like I was above it. You know what I mean? I was like,
dude, isn't that the weirdest feeling?
That sounds terrible
but it's so crazy because I get exactly what you're saying, because I remember also as well, like, coming to Joburg, being completely broke, and my mom's like, yeah, you must go pack food at Checkers and make money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no ways, mom. Like, I'm not going to go fucking do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to build the thread of
man. Yeah, exactly.
So it's like this. And I remember in fashion school, people being like, yo, you're so arrogant. You think you're it all. I'm like, no, guys, I just hold myself to a certain standard. And
yeah.
I'm going to be there.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy because a lot of young people, same back to what you're saying, a lot of young people, especially today, everyone feels like, I can't do a certain thing because I need money. I can't do this. I need, when I have this money, I'm going to start creating this kind of work.
You got to do it now.
And the thing is that you got to do it now. And I think that's a huge part of our success, is that people will think we have millions of money, but it's just that we choose every single day, whether we're rich or poor, to create the most honest work possible.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it is. And it's like, And people tend to believe, it's like really corny, but like, believe in yourself. Like, the best way to do that, in my opinion, is that I think that like a lot of people don't know who they are, because like from the time that you're born, everyone and everything is telling you who you
are. Projected,
right?
Onto you.
Yes.
And you end up projecting it into your
social condition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like people tell you, like, put labels on you. They'll say you're a man, you're black, you're Xhosa, you're this, you're that. And there's nothing wrong with those things except the expectations that they come with. So when you don't fit that mold of the expectation of the title, then you're looked at as a failure. Oh, you're not a man because you cry. You're not this because you're not doing it this way. You're not this because you do that. And then now, basically, you're a grown up, you're a teenager, you're an adult, and like you feel like a failure because you've not met the expectations that the titles that are put on you, you know, ask of you. So it's like the way that I was able to do that was like isolation.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, wait, like who am I when these titles are stripped from me at my foundational level? Like who am I and who do I have the potential to be? And that's why that's what I meant by like creating my own world inside, like where the sun is always shining. Yeah. Right. So it's like it sounds a little like delusional, but it's kind of the only way that I can keep relatively sane.
Mm. Wow. Guys, please like text us on 0797-482-0090 on WhatsApp. It's cliffcentral.com on Twitter. And of course, it's the thread exchange on Twitter as well. Tell us what you think about this conversation. I think this is a very enlightening conversation. Sticking to Black History Month, I'm going to play another song by Fela Kuti and it's titled Gentlemen. When we come back, you're going to break down for me what is the culture. Everybody always says, I'm for the culture. I'm improving the culture. I'm doing everything culture, culture. Yo, you're rocking the culture. You're against the culture. There's even beefs around what the culture means.
Yeah.
So as someone that I know is a cultural curator and someone who's on the forefront of documenting things across all these different industries, I want to hear from you. What is your take on that right after this? Yo, being African is the best thing in the whole wide world, man. Like, I know this sounds very corny, and a lot of people say, yo, you corny, you hear it all the time, sir, and Twitter, but being black is fucking dope. Our stories, our cultures, and I know some of you are sitting there at home, and you're being like, oh, I'm frustrated, I'm trying to build my hustle, but it's not working out. Some of you probably be in the Eastern Cape, you're like, fuck, I want to get out of here. And I'll tell you this, African child, your story is what's going to take you out of that situation. Like, I'm not saying enjoy the pain. I'm not definitely not saying that, but know that pain you're going through, whatever struggle it is, it's going to serve you a great purpose down the line. Because I look at my career and the things that I do, I always draw from that place of like, yo, I went through this as a kid. How can I tell the story to find a bigger relation amongst other kids? And I say, African child, tell your story, be proud of your story, express yourself. If you want to cry, cry. If you wanna take that risk, take that risk. If you feel like you wanna quit your job and you feel like you're being strangled by your job, quit. You know, we always wanna wait for something that will never come. We're always like, oh, I can't do this because I need money. Oh, I can't leave my job. There's no tomorrow.
Just go out there and
just
get
go
it.
Out
do
there it. And fucking get it. And I know it sounds easy for me to say, but moving to Joba, I had no money, I had no plan. My parents couldn't even know how they're gonna pay for my school fees to go to fashion school. But I'm here. You know, I'm here. My company almost went bankrupt last year, but I'm still here and I'm still creating and I'm still living and I'm using that story to take me forward. I'm that experience to also help others.
And I think to like a certain degree, if you want to do something and you don't really believe that you can do it, I feel like do it while you think you can't anyway. Because by the moment that you can, it's a whole different story. So be uncomfortable doing it, but you know deep down it's something that you want to do. Like struggle with that shit. It's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Fred, what experience have you been through where you're like, at that time, you're like, fuck, this is so deep. I'll never make it out of this. If I do, thank God. And now you look back and you're like, yo, that was actually important. I'm happy that happened.
I would say, I mean, to choose a professional experience, I'd probably say like 2 years ago when I decided to part ways with Hype Magazine.
Dude, that was huge. Yeah. Everybody was like, everyone was like, this is a stupid move, don't do it.
Yeah, because exactly,
you're like the king of the castle.
Exactly. I'd been there for 6 years. I started as a freelance writer, made it to editor-in-chief while doing like a bunch of other things. And people were like, yeah, this is you. This is your domain. This is where. And then I decided to do it like almost a year and a half after I reached what I, you know, had been wanting to achieve since I was like 13 years old. So everyone was like, and then I was like, no, I got this, that, and then like I spent like maybe 6 to 8 months in that period like doubting myself like every single day because things weren't the same, you know, like you realize that, for example, like you're a title to people, you know, so people are not necessarily like taking your calls anymore. People are not, you know, that kind of thing. And every day I would be like, oh snap, did I make a bad decision? Yeah. You know, but like, you know, I just dug deeper and, yeah, I'm happy that I made that choice because, I know now that I'm more than what more like than people
that,
like,
that platform look, yeah. doesn't define your journey.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's get into it. Last 10 minutes of the show. The culture.
Yeah.
Everybody says it. I'm for the culture. I'm doing this for the culture. You're not doing this for the culture. What is the culture according to you?
Jeez, that's such a loaded question. But I will say that if you find yourself arguing with anybody else about, you know, I'm doing this for the culture, you're not doing this for culture, this is what the culture needs, is like you're probably not of the culture as much as you think you are. Because
wait, repeat that. Those are bars. Guys, can you just listen to this? Say that again, please.
Well, okay, what I'm saying is if you find yourself in situations where you are arguing with somebody or bickering with somebody or you're angry and you're saying, you know, I'm of the culture and you're not of the culture and you're probably not of the culture. And the reason you're probably not of the culture as much as you think you are. And the reason why I say that is I feel like when you are doing stuff, quote unquote, for the culture, it's for the benefit of like human beings. You know what I mean? So it's coming from a selfless place. So people who are coming from a selfless place, you may have a way that you go about it, and I may have a way that I go about it, and those methods might be different, but we'll always find ourselves at the foundation, which is that I want to see the people do better. And it's like Malcolm X and
Martin Luther King
had a radical approach, one had a passive approach. They had some differences in ideology, but they were not enemies because they wanted the same.
Steve Biko, Nelson Mandela.
Exactly, because they wanted the same thing. So I just think, like, I always go by like Mos Def. Like Mos Def said, you know, if you want to see where like the culture is going, you want to see where hip hop is going, look at the people, because like people are the culture. You know what I mean? So it's the, like, the word they always use is zeitgeist. Yeah. It's so like
huge. Take a look at the zeitgeist. Kanye says that in his what's that album where he was frustrated?
Yeezus.
Yeah, something popular on the zeitgeist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the word they use is zeitgeist. So it's like, that's like the, when you read that definition, it's really broad, but that's probably like the best description if you want to get to it. But it's
what are people fucking with now?
It's the movement that the people are going with. When you look at like the 70s, the peace movement, when you look at, there's a thread of identity that kind of defines every decade, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I think the culture is. And that is inclusive of everything, of politics,
so
of
do
music,
you
of
think,
fashion.
Like, as creatives in the industry right now, when we talk about the culture, like the way that you're saying, you know, when we say we're doing it for the culture, do you think the way we view culture is inhibiting us from actually influencing the culture because we tell ourselves that, yeah, this is the culture. So we're seeing it from a very boxed perspective.
Yeah.
Do you think it's actually blocking the incredible work we could do if we saw the bigger vision of what culture really
is?
Yeah,
I definitely think that. I think, like, why are we getting stuck in definitions? You know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't make any sense. If you're doing something from a place of sincerity, right, it will lend itself to the causes and the people and the associations that it needs to, like, organically. I'm not saying don't plan. I'm saying do what you feel you want to do and what you feel you can contribute. And, like, you will find yourself maybe rubbing shoulders with Virgil one day. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure that's not something that you thought about when you were, like, 16 or 15. Maybe.
Dude, that's not something I thought about even an hour before it happened.
You know what I'm saying?
Or even 5 minutes before.
Exactly.
Like, that happened in the most weird way.
But you were just somewhere doing what you needed to be doing that day, and it happened. So it's like getting stuck in definitions, like arguing with people. It's like, that to me, it's like, it's nonsensical, man.
Yeah. And the thing is, where do you think culture is going? And as black people, or as people of color, and as Africans, every single one of us, whether we're creative or not creative, I feel we have a responsibility.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we as normal human beings are the culture. Yeah. We're going to have children. We have families that are influenced by that culture.
Yeah.
And all of us, every single one of us, are custodians of that culture.
For sure.
What do you think we can do better to influence the culture? How do you think we can become more conscious that our everyday living is building towards that culture?
I think taking responsibility is like the first step to making any kind of contribution. Because like I know it's easy to say like, okay, cool, we live in a free South Africa, this, that, da 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 da, and so we can just do what we want. I mean, it would be great to be able to do whatever we want with no consequences. But it's like, if everybody commits themselves to like, you know what, I'm going to do something to get closer to what I feel my purpose is, and then take responsibility of that. Not everybody can or needs to be Kanye. Not everybody can or needs to be Julius Malema. Not everybody, you know what I mean? Like, whatever
not
faction
has
that you
to be afraid.
Well, you know what I mean? Not everyone has to be Fred. Sometimes, like, some people need to learn that, you know, like, yo, maybe, like, rap is not for you. Like, maybe, like, fashion not. But whatever, like, your purpose is, and then when you take responsibility for what you do and realize that, like, you know, that's how everyone else thinks. Yeah. That's how Jews think. That's how Chinese people think. That's how they're, like, they're not just thinking about now. It's a generational thing, right? So take some responsibility and be like, you know what, I've got a little bit of responsibility, like, in, like, historically, like, what I do now is going to mean something. Like, if you commit yourself to finding your purpose, taking some responsibility, like, we'll get there.
Damn, I have nothing to say on top of that. I think we've already run out of time, but guys, I'm actually trying to convince Fred to join me at least once a month, where we carry these conversations and co-host together. So hopefully he'll agree. It's not the last time he's going to be on the show. But Fred, thank you so much for coming through, man. This was such an interesting conversation, and I want to keep going, but we're running out of time. Yeah. Where can people find you?
Cool. I'm not as important as I have a little organization called Breakfast for Dinner. So that's breakfast with no vowels, and then number four, and then dinner. That's on Twitter and on Instagram, and you know, we're gonna be doing a lot of cool stuff on there, so you know, find
us. You just released a documentary with Shane Eagle. Where can people view that if they want to watch it?
Well, I released a documentary, and the documentary is introducing a series that I'm doing, and the first installment was with Shane Eagle. It's not out yet publicly. I had a private screening last year, but it's going to be out in March. So just follow the pages Breakfast for Dinner, Instagram, and Twitter.
Okay, cool, guys. I'm Siyabonga Beyile. This is The Thread Exchange, and I'm signing out.
This is CliffCentral.com.